The ball is tipped, and there you are. You're running for your life. You're a shooting star. One shining moment is all on the line. One shining moment.
Welcome back, college basketball fans, to another episode of CBB 365. I'm Adam Hipsky, as always, alongside Patrick Dallahan. Joining us today is NCAA March Madness reporter, analyst, and host of the March Madness 365 podcast, Andy Katz, as well as founder, manager, and editor for SB Nation's Card Chronicle, Mike Rutherford.
Joining us today for a special episode of CBB 365, Andy Katz. Andy, thank you for joining us today. How are you?
How are you guys doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Obviously,
pandemic.
Yeah, yep. we're trying our hardest to survive, staying safe. A lot of stuff going on in college basketball, even though there hasn't been an actual game since like March. A lot of scandals going on with Louisville and Kansas, both of them. Going forward, how will the newly resurrected Nike and Adidas situations affect the NCAA's voting to let athletes make money off their likeness?
So the name, image, and likeness, you know, the NCAA put out what they think will happen. I mean, it still needs to be voted on. You know, so I think we're trending in that direction where athletes will be able to make money off their name, image, and likeness. It was never going to be paid by a university. They're not going to be employees. What I'm going to be interested to see, and this is more for your generation, is more, can more money be made through social media than in traditional sponsorships? You know, whether that's TikTok or Twitter or Instagram, can you be an influencer? You know, especially in a lot of these major metropolitan areas, if you're at UCLA or USC, you know, it's really hard to get into that endorsement market in LA because of all the pro athletes. So you may not get much of anything. So maybe it's more amenable to you to get something through social media. Maybe it is regardless. Now, if you're in a small college town, Lexington, Kentucky, you know, Bloomington, Indiana, places like that, you know, you might be able to get the local car dealer or what have you, just, you know, where there's much more of a hyper focus in that community and everyone knows who you are much more than a major city. I still am a little skeptical as to how much money is out there. And I would say this even before coronavirus, you know, now even more so about how much money, you know, can be made off of this. But I do think it's a start, and I think it's something that, you know, was trending in the right direction. I don't think it'll ruin the game. I think you're looking at more of a select group of individuals that'll be able to do this, and we'll see how it all goes.
So recently it came out from Zion Williamson's former marketing agent that he could have possibly received benefits from Duke University to play there. Has there been any steps forward, like towards an investigation in that situation?
No, I mean, that's way premature right now. I mean, this is now a court case between his former marketing agent and him, obviously a dispute. They're pursuing through depositions to try to get people on the record to see what he did accept, if anything. So I think it's way premature to see what would happen. Obviously nothing can happen to him. I mean, you know, maybe financially through this case, but not, you know, anything NCAA related. And we'll see if this ever, you know, comes back to hurt Duke in any way. You know, you asked at the beginning about some of these other investigations, and, you know, the Kansas one is still being challenged by Kansas. And so that's still going to be drawn out because they're appealing the charges. Louisville is probably going to go down that same path as well. So I still think we're months away from any kind of resolution with both those schools and maybe others that could be involved from this FBI investigation that was a couple years ago. You know, like everything, though, we're all hunkered down, and it's really harder to do investigations right now. So that's why I think it'll slow things even more as to whether or not we'll get any kind of resolutions, you know, in the next couple of months.
You said it's a little premature for anybody to really come up with any punishments, but let's just say if Louisville, like, gets in more trouble than they are right now, and they get and all of this stuff comes out that they actually did illegally pay players, or Adidas did, what kind of punishments could Louisville be facing?
So the Louisville case is very interesting because no one involved in the case is still there.
Patino's at Iona now.
Right. So Rick Pitino's at Iona. It cost him his job, obviously, and this it was a cumulative effect of multiple investigations and embarrassing moments that happened at Louisville. So we'll see. I mean, I think, and I'm not speaking out of school here, I think if anything happens to him, it would be a game penalty. We've seen this before where, a coach could get 3 games, 5 games, 9 games of a penalty. I think that's probably what will happen at some point. Whether that happens next season in his first season at Iona, does it happen the year after? We'll have to wait and see. But this will be an interesting test case for the NCAA and Louisville because you're now multiple years past. So, how much more can you penalize a school when no one is there from these alleged violations? Used to be all the time they would still penalize the school even if, everyone was gone. But I think, the trend has been moving away from that and trying to hit the individuals, especially if they've moved on to other jobs. So that's why I'm a little skeptical that there will be major, ramifications for Louisville, even though they're a multiple offender in violation of rules.
All right, Andy, thanks for joining us today. With the emergence of the new G League pathway program and other new pathways like the one LaMelo Ball took, do you think the NCAA will feel inclined to accelerate some rule changes like the new NIL rules, creating the one-time transfer rule with no having to sit out for a year?
So the one-time transfer rule, I think, will go into place for the fall of 21, not this year. Even though coaches are against it, I think there's a sense to sort of appease student athletes to give them something. But I think in terms of the G League, that's really more of an NBA thing. The NBA has to change the one-and-done rule. In the 90s, you go straight out of high school to the NBA. LeBron obviously did it, Kevin Garnett, Kobe Bryant, and there were a number of others. And college basketball is fine. I think we're going to get back to that, but that's an NBA Players Association and NBA collective bargaining agreement. The NCAA has to react to it, but they can't control that. So I think that will have a major factor on this G League opportunity here. I'm also, I'm not trying to be, completely skeptical here, but I think for some players, it's great. Some players don't want to go to college. They just want to go and be pros, and that's fine. And I think they should have that opportunity. But I'm just a little skeptical of how much money is out there beyond the top 10 or 15 players. After that, I can't see the NBA investing, six figures in players to put them on a developmental team. Because then if they don't pan out, then they're cast aside and their amateur status is gone. At least if you have a bad freshman year, you come back for sophomore year, then you can still declare for the draft. We'll see, but I'm a little skeptical as to how deep this will go. This will be an interesting trial and error. Right now, I think there's, 4 top players in the class of 2020 that are doing it. So we'll see. I do think that the NBA rule has to change sooner than later to get rid of the one and done.
We just learned today that Nojel Eastern is transferring from Purdue, and he's going to head to Ann Arbor to play for Michigan next year. What does he bring to the table for Michigan, whether he is going to be playing next season or in 2 seasons? What do you see that can make him, I guess, a factor in Ann Arbor?
Well, he's a really good defender, one of the best defenders in the Big Ten and in the country. So he'll add that. But he's got, the year off will actually help him because he needs to become a better scorer. That's one of the problems he had at Purdue. That has to improve. Look, the transfer thing, I think it permeates at the high school level and beyond in college too. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of players look for a quick fix and try to, if they've got an issue or a problem, they don't always look to solve it where they are. And they want to go, always the grass is greener. And, I'm always more impressed for those that can persevere through an adverse situation, get through it, and stay, at their institution. Look, it'll be interesting, though, going from Purdue to Michigan. He didn't leave on good terms with Matt Painter. So there's no question this will be an interesting transfer whenever he's eligible, whenever Purdue and Michigan play against each other.
Matt Painter, actually, did you listen to his interview yesterday with Doc?
I did. He didn't hold anything back.
All right, looking back on last season, who did you think was going to make a run heading into the tournament before everything got canceled?
So that week before it got canceled, I was at the Dayton URI game. I'd seen Dayton, on television, seen them play in the Maui Invitational against Kansas. But then when I saw them in person, you saw how big Obi Toppin is and just everyone else on their squad, it was eye-opening and said, okay, wait, this team actually could get, you know, to the Final Four. So I felt really good about Dayton, Gonzaga. I'd seen them actually in Vegas win their WCC title. Kansas, they were playing great. And then I just had a feeling that a Big Ten team was going to get there. Which one? Was it Michigan State? Michigan? Was it Illinois? Was it Maryland? I felt like one of those teams was going to get to the Final Four. So that was going to be my Final Four in some form or fashion. I had to see the bracket to see which Big Ten team I was going to pick. But that's what I was thinking as we're going into that last week.
One thing I have to say about Dayton is everybody was complaining that, like, oh, it's the A-10. They're not that good. But, like, people forget that teams like URI are actually very solid. Like, URI has Fats Russell. He should be well-known around the country. Like, he's a baller.
The thing with Dayton was they proved it against, even though they didn't win it, but it was an overtime against Kansas and Maui. And that was a strong indicator early in the season that they were up for the challenge of being a national title contender.
Do you think that there's a chance that there's going to be no fans in college basketball next year?
So college football, if it happens, yes. College hoops, I'm still optimistic that at some point in the season, we will have fans. Will we, if it starts on time in November? Possibly no, but I'm just going to remain optimistic that we'll be in a different place in the new year. So I'm going to remain optimistic that things will get better. You know, will we have a packed house? Probably not, but will we hopefully be in a position where we can have a significant amount of fans as the season progresses and hopefully at the Final Four in Indy? Yes, I'm going to remain cautiously optimistic.
Looking ahead to next season, you talk about whether or not fans or playing without fans is a possibility. How might college basketball look different with various safety regulations in place?
So, you know, the good thing for hoops is that they've got, you know, the other sports, if they happen, as sort of a guinea pig to see how it plays out. Obviously, it's easier in basketball than it is football because you have less players. So you have more to monitor. I think we're going to see, you know, obviously hyper-focus of testing. You know, the key thing that I think will be true as students and athletes, if someone tests positive, inevitably it'll probably happen. We're hoping we're at a point where just that person would have to be taken out of the mix and, you know, quarantined, and maybe it won't be for 14 days, whatever that time period is. And then, you know, by testing everyone else around, you know, if people are negative, then they can go on and you don't have to shut down a whole school or shut down a whole team. You know, look, you can't fault what the NBA did with Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell in those first 2 days in March because no one knew. And yes, of course, it's really widespread. It's caused, hard to even fathom everything. These numbers of death. So we can't dismiss that. But I do think we will be at a point where it'll be, I guess, manageable is maybe the right word, or at least more understood about how to handle it. Better treatments, may not have a cure, but better treatments. And obviously, you know, the other thing that's going to factor into all this is going to be cleaning. And I think you could see longer games because I think they're going to spend more time cleaning. You know, so let's say at halftime of a game, you know, they're out cleaning surfaces, the bench, and all those kinds of things, which, by the way, guys, I actually saw because I was there at the Big Ten tournament the first 48 hours as things were starting to deal with this. And that one night of games at the Big Ten tournament, when the two teams went in the locker room, we did see a cleaning crew come in and wipe down all the bench seats. Really? And that was just literally in the first 2 days of all this. So my gut is all of that will happen. You know, also I could see, like, you know, on the sidelines in whatever sport it is, football, soccer, field hockey, whatever is able to, volleyball, and then ultimately basketball, I think we're going to see literally right next to the bench, you know, either a little, if you can do a hand washing station, if not, it's Purell. I mean, you know how you see the portable ones that are standing up in airports and stuff like that. I think we'll see that. Player comes out, you know, gets his hands clean, then goes to the bench. I just think there's going to be a lot more visual aids, if you will, to making sure people do that.
All right, real quick, last question. How do you think the NCAA and the NBA postponing the early entry deadline will affect the start of whether it's, you know, off-season workouts or practices heading into just the start of the season next year?
So more than likely, the draft is going to be moved off of June 25th. That has not happened yet, but it probably will be August or September. And then there will be a date for the NCAA to come up with. That'll be an early entry withdrawal date. My gut is either no later than July 1, maybe August 1, but somewhere in that range that they'll come up with that. And, you know, players are going to have to make a decision. It's going to be a crazy draft because it'll be virtual. And so ultimately, I think that we'll see more players return than normal, you know, in past years, just because there's no certainty right now, you know, in what anyone knows what the season will look like.
All right. So that's going to do it for this interview with Andy. So, Andy, thank you so much for taking the time to come on to the pod.
I'll tell you guys, you were well prepared. You knew your topics. This was great. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Andy.
Okay, so now we are joined by Mike Rutherford. He writes for the Card Chronicle of SB Nation. That's a Louisville-based website. Mike, how are you today?
I'm doing well, guys. Thanks so much for having me on.
No, thanks for coming on. So just starting off, can you give us a general overview of the different violations Louisville allegedly committed, and how do they stack up against those of Kansas and other schools involved in the scandal?
Sure. I'm well-versed on all the violations that have taken place over the past 5 years or so. I think the big thing with Louisville, and the thing that Louisville was really worried about, was getting multiple level one violations, which are the worst, basically the most punishable violations that the NCAA has. They only got one of those. And you asked about comparing that to what Kansas got. Louisville had one level one violation in its notice of allegations. Kansas had five. Not to say that Kansas is going to get hammered more than Louisville is, but that's those are just the facts. And the level one violation that we're talking about pertains to Brian Bowen, the player who I think has probably been the focal point of the FBI's probe into college basketball from 2017. Never played for Louisville. I think played one practice before this whole thing went down in late September of 2017, but was allegedly offered $100,000 by Adidas to come play for an Adidas school, which wound up being Louisville. One of those payments was made. I think it was $18,000 and change. But the big thing as far as Louisville's concerned, this level one violation, is the allegation that Kenny Johnson, who was a Louisville assistant at the time, just got fired by LaSalle actually earlier this week, had paid Brian Bowen Sr. $1,300 in cash for rent, basically. They were staying at a hotel in Louisville, and that's the allegation there. And it's a big deal for Louisville because at the time that that allegedly occurred, Louisville was already on probation from the Katina Powell stripper stuff. So a level one violation while on probation, don't think I need to tell you guys, not great. You don't want to put your faith in the NCAA in those in that situation. But that's the big one. That's the level one violation. The three level two violations mostly pertain to coaches that are no longer at Louisville. The one that probably got the most attention is the one about Rick Pitino, saying that he had a failure to monitor, and they also brought the Andre McGee stuff back into it, saying that there's a history there. So that level one violation or level two violation shouldn't really affect Louisville that much. It should be more Rick Pitino and how severely he's punished at Iona. The other one was about another assistant, Jordan Fair, who no longer is in coaching. And then the third one was, I think it was driving Christian Dawkins, one of these Adidas representatives, to like a restaurant or something like that. So the three level two violations, they should not, like, that's if Louisville gets banned from another postseason, it's not going to be because of that. That just could add up and being like a extra probation, maybe a couple of scholarships. It's basically just more ammo for the NCAA to use if they want to really, really drop the hammer on Louisville.
So where does the idea of Adidas serving as a booster come in? Like, how do the NCAA and Adidas schools differ on that issue?
Yeah, I think that's the maybe the biggest or most contentious part of that level one violation that we're talking about. And it's really interesting because they made the same accusation against Kansas in their notice of allegations against Kansas, saying the Adidas employees in question, primarily TJ Gasnola, was working as a booster for Kansas. And it's going to be a real focal point of both cases. The benefit that Louisville has is they actually get to watch how the Kansas case with the NCAA will play out, because they're further back in the timeline now, obviously. And if Kansas is able to successfully argue that being an Adidas employee doesn't make you a booster for a school that you have a partnership with, then you would assume Louisville's going to follow that same blueprint and argue the same exact thing. Conversely, if the NCAA is successful in saying, yes, they are boosters, Louisville kind of throws their hands up and says, well, that's not great for us. We're going to have to figure another avenue to go on. But it is, look, this whole thing, and I hate to just dismiss it and say it's stupid, even though it's stupid, the whole thing is just ridiculous. But it's the absurdity of it is perfectly laid out in the fact that the people that we're talking about, the Adidas employees that we're talking about, were labeled by the federal court of the United States of America as defrauders of the schools here. They defrauded Louisville. They defrauded Kansas. They defrauded NC State, and they served jail time for that. Those same people now are being called boosters by the NCAA, and the schools in question have re-upped with, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars with the school. Kansas, just after saying, look, these guys defrauded us, we're the victims here and all this, they signed a $182 million deal with Adidas. Louisville did the same thing. So, like, everybody who's saying, it's them, it's not us, let's back up, but we're going to take their money. We're going to keep taking their money. We have to fund our athletic programs. Every single level of this is absurd, and it's not the schools involved. It's just the basic layout of college athletics. Not that I don't love it, not that I'm not going to keep following it and all that good stuff, but it is. I think we can all admit there's a level of absurdity to all of it.
Oh, yeah. What would Louisville gain by entering, like, the full-fledged defensive mode, like, pretty much just saying, like, no, we didn't do it? Like, what would they gain by that instead of just saying that you just need to accept what you did?
I think we're going to find out because they took the second approach that you're talking about there in their last bout with the NCAA and got obliterated. Like, they benefited not whatsoever. And we don't need to dive too deeply into what happened with the Katina Powell stuff and walk that through. But basically, a quick summary is Louisville found out about this stuff. They actually self-reported to the NCAA and said, whatever you want us to do, we're going to work hand in hand. We'll be right there through the process. And then in the middle of a really successful season, 2015-16, they self-imposed a postseason ban. They had just beaten number one North Carolina. They were ranked in the top 25. They were trending towards being like probably a four seed in the NCAA tournament. And that's different than if you go back and look at when Syracuse self-imposed in, I think it was 2011, maybe 2010 with the Fab Mello stuff. They were terrible. They were going to miss the NCAA tournament anyway. SMU, same exact thing from a few years ago. Louisville punished itself more than all of the other schools that have self-imposed a ban because that team had a legit shot to play deep into the NCAA tournament. And the NCAA took all of that stuff and said, we don't care. We don't care that you were forthcoming. We don't care that you're honest. We don't care that you punish yourself. We're making you the first program that we've ever taken a national title away from. We're taking away your 2012 Final Four. We're putting you on probation. And we're basically putting you in a position where if you screw up at all, you're going to have to fire everybody and you're going to be decimated. And that's exactly what wound up happening. So Louisville, I think, looks at all that and then looks at something like the situation with North Carolina, the infamous academic scandal where they spent $20 million and lawyered up, you know, had middle fingers up to the NCAA the entire time and essentially skated. Like, and I think Louisville now is looking at all these cases and saying the schools that have been the most compliant, the schools that have been the most forthcoming have been the ones that have been punished the most. So we took that approach round one. Round two, we're not going down that road again. This is going to be a war. We're going to argue every single point we can. They also did make it a point, though. You said, you know, deny everything. They made it a point, both the president of the school, who's brand new, by the way, Neely Bendapudi, and the athletic director, who's also new, Vince Tyre, to say, where there was obvious wrongdoing, we're going to take our punishment for that. But where we disagree with the NCAA, we're not going to just sit back like we did a couple of years ago and let them do whatever they want to us. We're going to fight as much as we can. They hired a new attorney. His name's Mike Glazer. He works for the same firm that, ironically, since we just talked about it, represented North Carolina in their whole academic deal. He worked with Missouri. He actually, and this is maybe the most interesting point, he represented Louisville in the 90s and got a postseason ban against Louisville for the 1999 NCAA tournament overturned. Now, you may wonder, if he did that, why in the world are you not hiring him when the last thing happens in 2015?
Yeah.
And a lot of Louisville fans have been asking that exact same question for the last couple of weeks. So, but Mike Glazer will be their attorney, and everything that they've said indicates that they're going to fight tooth and nail here.
What are the next steps in the process for both sides towards eventual penalties?
Yeah, Louisville's got its notice of allegations now. They have 90 days to respond to that. And then after they send their response to the NCAA, the NCAA has 60 days to respond to that. And if you are wondering how I'm so familiar with this timeline, it's because I've done it before. I've done it before a couple of times. But after that, you're going to see, you know, that's when things are going to get really interesting because Louisville, I think this is just a prediction that I'm making with you guys. I think they're going to go and try to take this case to the new complex case unit, which is a group of 15 lawyers/judges that the NCAA has now created based on the recommendations from that Commission on College Basketball that was headed by Condi Rice, because apparently Condoleezza Rice has to somehow be involved in everything in sports for no apparent reason. But
future Browns coach Condoleezza Rice to you.
Exactly. Future, the only person that can save the Cleveland Browns, Condoleezza Rice. But that was her recommendation, was to create this independent body. And the main reason for that was it was an attempt to punish individuals more than programs, which sounds great to Louisville because they're the only school in all of this that has fired everybody. Like, Rick Pitino's not there, the athletic director's not there, the president's not there, nobody's there that was involved in any of this. So if they're saying they're going to punish individuals, great, but they're not there anymore. And I think Louisville just wants to get as far away from the NCAA as possible. And the big thing, the big deterrent to going to this new complex case unit is supposed to be you lose the ability to file an appeal. Whatever they decide is final. And for Louisville, if you look at what happened with them the last time again, they wrote their appeal. They had the big hearing. They laid out all of this stuff. And one of their big things was saying what we've just been talking about. You're supposed to, by your own bylaws, by the NCAA's own bylaws, you're supposed to take into account self-punishment, mitigating factors, being compliant, being easy to work with. You guys said that, and you guys said that punishments are supposed to be less if you do that. We did all those things. You took them into zero consideration. And the NCAA, responding to Louisville's appeal, said, you know what, guys, you're exactly right. We were supposed to use those as mitigating factors. We were supposed to take those into consideration, and we didn't. And as a result, we're not changing your punishment at all. Like, they changed nothing. They admitted that Louisville was right in its argument and changed nothing. So I don't think that the appeal process, not being able to have it, is going to keep Louisville away from going to that complex case unit, which is going to be really interesting because we have no idea how that thing's going to operate. The only case right now that's set to go to the IARP is the Memphis James Wiseman thing, so we'll see how. I think NC State's probably going to go down the same road, and then I think Louisville will follow them. But I think they're basically just going to say, look, the infractions committee, they kind of have it out for us. We're an easy target. We think they're going to hammer us. We're going to take this thing away from them and hand it to these people who, you know, maybe aren't as familiar with our history with the NCAA.
So what are your predictions for the outcome of the scandal? Like, what do you think happens to Rick Pitino? And do you think any of their past accolades, like the Sweet 16 appearance, will be stripped?
It's not like last time, because none of the players that are involved in this played in any of the games that we're talking about. The only player that you could have said potentially would have been unable to play or would have been an unwilling participant would have been Brian Bowen, and he never played an actual game. Louisville got the banners taken away and all the records taken away because they played players, easy for me to say, who by the NCAA's ruling should have been ineligible because they got extra benefits because of all the strippers and that stuff. No, none of the players involved right now played a single game that are involved in this NCAA case. So I don't think you'll see anything taken away like that. I do think the NCAA is going to come down hard on Louisville just because why wouldn't I at this point? The NCAA is so impossible to predict. They make rulings from case to case that don't seem to make any sense. So anybody, including myself, who tells you they have a pretty good idea of what's going to happen, they're totally wrong. I mean, I could see Louisville completely walking. I could see Louisville getting like hit with a 10-year postseason ban. I don't know. It's probably going to be somewhere in between there. If I had to guess, and again, this is just throwing a dart, I do think Louisville gets another postseason ban when all said and done. I don't think it'll be for this upcoming season. I think it's more likely to be 2022, which that's the other thing. The length of time that it takes the NCAA to deal with cases like this, it's a punishment in its own right. Because when you look at where Louisville was when this whole thing was going, they won the national title in 2013. They'd been to a Final Four in 2012. They were one of the best teams in the country in 2014, Elite Eight in 2015. And heading into that 2017 season, they were set to be a preseason top 10, top 5 team, and they were recruiting really well. They had all the momentum in the world. It's really been slowed down. They've won one NCAA tournament game since then. Now, who's to say what would have happened this past year? But they lost Rick Pitino. They lost the most successful athletic director in program history. You can't say – I think you have to take those punishments into consideration. And if we're talking about potentially being banned from a postseason in 2022 or 2023 – you tell me how that's going to affect recruiting. You can't guarantee to these kids that they're recruiting right now that if you come here and play two seasons or play three seasons or play one season, you're definitely going to get to experience March Madness. And that's really, I think, hurting Chris Mack on the recruiting trail. Again, a guy who had nothing to do with any of this stuff. So that's my best guess. I don't think I don't think the process is going to be wrapped up quickly enough for the 2021 NCAA tournament to come into play, but I do think the NCAA looks at Louisville and says, I get that they fired everybody, but man, that's a school that was on probation and still did this stuff. We have to make an example out of them. And Louisville's an easy target because nobody's going to shed tears for Louisville. They kind of have an infamous reputation right now. So the general public is not going to be at the NCAA's throats if Louisville gets a harsh punishment. So I fully expect the NCAA to be pretty heavy-handed when all said and done.
What do you think happens to Rick Pitino? You know, obviously he's at Iona now. What do you think happens to him in the upcoming months?
It was interesting reading the notice of allegations. They included potential show cause orders for Kenny Johnson, who, like we just said, has now been fired at LaSalle, and for Jordan Fair, who's coaching, I think, AAU now. He blocked me on Twitter. I don't know. He's a weird guy. But he's not going to be allowed to get back into college basketball when all is said and done here. But they did not include a potential show cause order for Rick Pitino. They said that based on the violations that they alleged that he committed, and they also included two aggravating factors based on the 2015 case, he would be eligible for, I think, up to a half-season ban at Iona. And if you're Iona, cool. Whatever. Like you know, all these stories that have been written the past week about Iona needed to do more due diligence, they needed to do more research. What are you talking about? You could have Rick Pitino for, I don't know, 4.5 years. He sits out 15 games in November and December when you're in a, you know, one-bid league anyway. You're not going to build a non-conference resume that can get you into the NCAA tournament November and December if you're at Iona. You can win the MAC, though, and go to the NCAA tournament and make some noise there. And Pitino will be around for all that, regardless of what punishment he gets. And if you're Iona, great. I don't care if he's suspended for a full year. 3 years of Rick Pitino with 1 year in waiting is still better than 4 years of Joe Schmo or whoever else they would have been able to hire to replace Tim Clueis. I think that this is great news for them. They're doing well. And I think that that's probably what's going to wind up happening. Pitino gets, I don't know, maybe some sort of probation and then gets suspended for half of this upcoming season. And then that's it. That's done.
Going back to Louisville, do you think, you know, you mentioned the athletic director being gone, the president being gone, Rick Pitino being gone, all the players being gone. Do you think that will eventually matter to the NCAA?
I hope so. I don't think it's going to. I think that maybe they take it into consideration a little. The only way that I can put it is it will matter as far as if Pitino was still there after another scandal and Tom Jurich was still there and nothing had changed. I think there's no way that Louisville wouldn't get torpedoed. So in that regard, it matters a little bit. But if you're saying, you know, the NCAA is going to look at all this and say, well, nobody's there who was involved in any of this stuff, how can we punish innocent parties? I don't think they're going to do that either. I think they have to find a middle ground. And that's understandable because you can't just lay out a blueprint where schools can say, we can cheat our asses off and we'll just fire everybody if we get into trouble, and then move on and start cheating again with the new head coach and the new president and the new AD. Like, that would, I think, set a scary precedent if you're the NCAA. So you have to do something about that. But at the same time, you know, Chris Mack had nothing to do with this. Vince Tyree had nothing to do with this. These players that came here to play for Louisville, half of them don't even know about this. They weren't paying attention in 2017 when the story broke. So how fair is it to keep them out of the NCAA tournament next season or in two seasons when they weren't involved in all this? But again, that's the NCAA's to deal with. And I don't think that they're going to take that into quite as much consideration as a fan like me would hope.
So that's going to do it for our interview with Mike Rutherford. Mike, thank you so much for coming on today. Really awesome interview.
Absolutely, guys. I love what you all are doing.
Thank you.